Last July, I read in the Siberian Times newspaper that a helicopter pilot had discovered a 300-foot-wide crater in Siberia. Now, the crater is like the sinkholes that we know and love here in Florida, except that in Siberia, outside the sinkhole, there are rocks and other debris, suggesting that sometime in the past, perhaps about 2 years ago, based on the vegetation growing there, there was an explosion that created the sinkhole. In recent months, scientists have spotted more such sinkholes in Siberia, prompting calls for urgent research to confirm what is causing them. Now, I like to start my sermons with a joke or two, but when it comes to the issue of climate change, there's not a lot to laugh about. However, on April 1st, the Siberian Times carried this article. The team from the Russian Academy of Scientists used a satellite phone to report the discovery of an unidentified object resembling a space capsule in one of dozens of craters to have been discovered recently in Arctic Russia. The scientists said the gray-colored object was made of a metal unknown on Earth. They reported a hostile environment at the 48-meter-deep crater, but did not give further details before their call was cut. Experts from a leading Siberian university also requested an emergency evacuation from the crater site after an unexplained fault with their helicopter. At this moment, their call ended, and we could not reach them again. When we sent back a backup helicopter to open the site, there was no sign of the three-man team, said a spokesman for the emergency ministries. They vanished. The crater was empty. Searching will continue throughout April 1st. Rescuers do not exclude that the men have been kidnapped. The team has been carrying the investigation of the cause of the mysterious craters, and we're taking detailed measurements at the site. The Siberian Times, April 1st, 2015. Of course, the alien space capsule and the mysterious abductions were an April Fool's joke. However, the craters themselves are real. Currently, the Arctic is warming twice as fast as the rest of the planet. Frozen in permafrost is a tremendous amount of carbon and methane, or as they say in England, methane. As the permafrost thaws, the carbon and the methane are released into the atmosphere. Methane is more powerful at warming the planet than carbon dioxide. Therefore, it has the potential to accelerate global warming rapidly. Scientists believe that methane gas exploding when the permafrost thaws created the sinkholes. So this crater is caused by global warming. Now, at the other end of the Earth, a team of scientists has discovered that shelves in the Western Arctic are shrinking, ice shelves are shrinking faster than they realized. In a report published on March 26th, a climate scientist at San Diego Scripps Institution of Oceanography said, "We are starting to lose more ice at a faster rate. We are accelerating. The rate of shrinking has increased by 70% over the past decade. The ice is like a wall holding back Arctic water, and the wall is melting. If all of it melts, the ice in the West Antarctic could raise sea levels around the world by more than 9 feet. We're at about 20 feet here at the church. Craters in Siberia and melting ice in Antarctica. Although the first Earth Day was held 40 years ago in 1970, the efforts of environmental groups to respond to climate change have so far only been modestly successful. The United Nations has held a big climate change meeting each year since 1995. The next meeting will be in Paris starting at the end of November. Many hope that the Paris conference will end with a climate protocol that will continue and even surpass the Kyoto Protocol of 1997. Unitarian Universalists have been working on this issue for many years, and we do have some influence. For example, the current president of the United States, his grandmother was an active Unitarian Universalist, and she had a profound and positive influence on the values of her grandson. However, with only a few hundred thousand members around the world, Unitarians and Universalists are a small religious association, small compared, say, to the Roman Catholic Church. And the good news is that the new Pope is providing strong, positive leadership on this issue. The Vatican announced this past Tuesday that it will hold a one-day summit on climate change on April 28th, just a few days from now. The conference will feature some of the world's leading climate scientists. Vatican officials will call the conference Protect the Earth, Dignify Humanity, The Moral Dimensions of Climate Change, and Sustainable Development. It will be introduced by the Secretary General of the United Nations with the Pope present. According to the Vatican, the summit hopes to help build a global movement across all religions for sustainable development and climate change throughout 2015 and beyond, and to highlight the intrinsic connection between respect for the environment and respect for people, especially the poor, the excluded, the victims of human trafficking, and the victims of modern slavery, the children, and the future generations. This one day will also include participants from major world religions, and it aims to elevate the debate on the moral dimensions of protecting the environment before a papal encyclical is published on climate change this summer. Other religious leaders are also speaking out. The highest-ranking woman in the Anglican Communion has said climate denial is a blind and immoral position which rejects God's gift of knowledge. Catherine Jeffers Scorey is the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church and one of the most powerful women in modern Christianity. She says that climate change is a moral imperative. The bishop says it is much like the civil rights movement in this country, where we are attending to the rights of all people and the rights of the earth to continue to be a flourishing place. It is certainly a moral issue in terms of the impacts on the poorest and most vulnerable around the world. She was an oceanographer before she was ordained at the age of 40. The bishop said she hoped to use her visibility as a church leader to help drive action on climate change. As presiding bishop, she oversees 2.5 million members of the Episcopal Church in 17 countries and is one of the most prominent women in Christianity today. She says, I really hope to motivate average Episcopalians to see the severity of this issue, the morality of this issue. Turning the ship in another direction requires the efforts of many people who are moving all together in the same direction. Now, it's not just the Unitarian Universalists and the Catholic Pope and the Episcopal Bishop. There are other religious groups also speaking out. The Evangelical Climate Initiative is a campaign by conservative American church leaders calling for reduction in carbon dioxide emissions. More than 200 leading conservative Christian ministers have signed the Evangelical Climate Initiative statement. The Methodists are also taking a stand. The United Methodist Church, the third largest denomination in the United States, has dumped coal companies from their pension funds. The United Church of Christ is also stepping up. They have voted to divest their investments in fossil fuels. The World Council of Churches is also stepping up. They have pledged not to invest in fossil fuels. The Unitarian Universalist Association has also voted to divest its investments in fossil fuels. Our own church endowment is invested in the Unitarian Universalist Common Fund. Therefore, this church does not earn income from fossil fuel investments. The Pope hopes to address the United States Congress during his visit to America next September. And this is exactly where the pressure needs to be focused. One barrier to a comprehensive agreement in Paris is the United States Congress's inability to enact climate and energy legislation that limits greenhouse gases in the United States. Without a commitment from the United States, other nations are reluctant to set their own limits. Our climate negotiators do not want to negotiate a new protocol, a new treaty that the Senate will not support. Our nation has already been down that road with the Kyoto Protocol in 1997, which the Senate never ratified. Under our Constitution, the Senate, by a two-thirds vote, must approve treaties. However, the views in the Senate may be changing in response to the changing views of the American people. In Florida, for example, there are already parts of the state, especially in southeast Florida, that are complaining of beach erosion, of more frequent flooding of neighborhoods, and of saltwater intrusion into groundwater supplies. In a new study in Florida, 56% of citizens say that they believe climate change is at least partially caused by humans, 56%. And this opinion can be found in other states. Colorado, for example, 58% of the citizens say global warming is at least partially caused by human beings. In Nevada, the number is 57% of citizens who say global warming is partially caused by humans. This is true also in Wisconsin, in Texas, in Arizona, in Pennsylvania, in North Carolina, and in Iowa. Now, I mentioned these particular states, Florida, Colorado, Nevada, and the others, because in all of these states, there are senators serving these states who recently were asked to vote on the question, is global warming mostly caused by humans? And these senators said, no, it's not. But their own constituencies now disagree with them. These senators are sensitive to the opinions of the people in their states. If the people put on pressure in letters, in emails, even politically conservative senators will start to face the problem. I talked to someone who worked in a Senate staff once and said, how many letters does it take to get your attention on an issue? And she said, five. If it's not a major public issue that's in the news all the time, five. I said, well, how many letters does it take for it to go from not being very high on the senator's priority list to going to the top? She said, oh, 100 letters on one subject, and we'll start to put that way up on the priority list. 100 letters. I didn't believe it. So in my congregation in Bethesda, we had the issue of Darfur come out about 10 years ago. And I did an experiment where I invited members of the congregation to write individual letters to President Bush saying, you haven't mentioned Darfur in a speech in 6 months. We'd like you to mention it. And we signed those letters on Sunday, and we mailed them on Monday, individual letters, handwritten. On Thursday, President Bush mentioned Darfur for the first time in 6 months. So it can make a difference, even small pressure on Congress. Support is shifting away from the climate change deniers. For example, the conservative policy group, the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, has seen an exodus from some of its best-known corporate members, the big companies that were supporting them, this conservative lobby group. They've lost support and funding from Google, from Facebook, from Yahoo, from Northrop Grumman. Google publicly connected its decision to stop funding the American Legislative Exchange Council because of the climate change issue. And another example, Southern Company in Atlanta, Georgia. Southern Company is the country's fourth largest electric utility. And it's been funding the research, secretly funding the research, of a Dr. Willie Soon, a physicist who has written many papers over the last 10 years as a scientist, challenging the consensus view that links recent climate change to man-made greenhouse gases. Now, word has come out that the money for his research has come from organizations like Southern Company Utilities. And he's received $1.2 million in the last 10 years to do this research, kind of like the tobacco companies hiring doctors to say tobacco doesn't cause cancer. But now, Dr. Soon is losing his funding from Southern Company Utilities. Leaders in China have been another stumbling block to dealing with this issue. The 2009 talks in Copenhagen, the United Nations talks in Copenhagen, ended with many delegates blaming China for blocking progress towards building an agreement on climate change. Now, according to news reports, this is changing. In November of 2014, the President of China and the President of the United States issued a joint pledge to reduce pollution and carbon gas emissions. China is already the world's largest wind power users. According to news reports, on March 20th, Todd Stern, who should be a household name, a hero in our country, because he has been the chief negotiator on climate change at the United Nations for several years now. Todd Stern said that he is expressing cautious optimism about the progress of a new global climate change pact by the end of the year in Paris, stressing global cooperation between the United States and China to limit carbon emissions. Mr. Stern told reporters that the world's major carbon emitters, including the United States and China, are working more closely in the lead up to the United Nations climate negotiations scheduled for November and December in Paris. Mr. Stern said there was a greater measure of realism among participants. As President Obama said in his statement that you saw, when China and the United States, the world's two largest economies, cooperate, it makes a difference. 2 months ago, we had a climate program here at the church, and to promote it, I did a radio interview a couple days before the event. And the interviewer asked me, have we reached a tipping point, a positive tipping point in climate change, in dealing with climate change? And I replied that the thing about a tipping point is we don't know for sure it's occurred until we can look backwards and say, oh, that was it, a few years after it occurred. Nevertheless, I see hope everywhere. The Pope is getting involved in a big way. Other religious leaders are speaking out. Public opinion in conservative states like Florida is shifting. The leaders in China appear to be moving in the right direction. And finally, the numbers simply no longer add up in the old fossil fuel model. The cost of new coal and oil plants are becoming unmanageable, while the cost of solar energy and the cost of battery storage, which is very important for solar energy, they are dropping. On the cover of the Order of Service is the image of a 160-year-old statue called the Guardian Demon on the top of Notre Dame Cathedral. The statue looks out over all of Paris. It's part human and part beast and part angel. Now, in my imagination, the statue is looking out on a beautiful day on Earth and is wondering whether or not we humans will get our act together. In late November, the statue will overlook the Paris United Nations Conference on Climate Change. The conference may be a tipping point. It is, I think, the best hope for our future. The Earth is a beautiful place. Look at the grounds of our church this morning. Wonderful color is all around us. The green leaves, the white birds, the yellow butterflies, the smells of spring, the feeling of warm Florida air against our skin, the taste of orange juice in the morning. Life on this earth is a wonderful miracle. So let us enjoy this miracle and care for it so that our children and our grandchildren can also feel the joy that we feel. Let us lift up our voices and sing in celebration of the miracle of the earth all around us.